The Fan on Demand.
And good evening, everybody. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbett of Tennis Canada, and time for another edition of Aces here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, great you're with us once again this week, folks, and thanks for supporting the show. Hey, Tom is taking your questions on Aces throughout the course of the program. As usual, our mailbox, Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. No prize this week, but we will announce the winner of the Wilson Tennis Racket next week of all of our qualifiers. Hope you enjoyed the Rogers Cup. Tom, nice to see you. I certainly did. U.S. Open's a big story this week, but another fast word on the Rogers Cup. Another terrific tournament this year.
Well, more than terrific when you get a Canadian in the final, even if it's a bit of a disappointing result against Rafael Nadal. But to see the Pospisil Raonic semifinal was just fantastic. And, you know, I think a lot of us maybe didn't think we'd see something like that, especially because it guaranteed a Canadian in the final.
Great moment for Canadian tennis, and the future bodes so well. We'll wrap up the whole season and the U.S. Open next week as well. Next Thursday, we're back here. Same time slot here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Again, thanks so much for all your support. We'll read your questions throughout the course of the program for Tom in Tom's mailbag. We are going to talk, or Tom will, to one of Canada's top tennis players coming up in the second segment of the show today. Nice job getting this guy.
Vasek Pospisil couldn't be a hotter player in Canada at the moment. Couldn't be a nicer guy, actually.
Nicer guy, and we'll hear from him. But first up, tell us about our first guest.
Robbie Koenig is a former tour player. All the people in Canada who watch Sportsnet for the Masters 1000 tournaments all year long, especially obviously in Montreal and Cincinnati recently, I've heard Robbie. He was a very good doubles player. He's been a broadcaster for 6 or 7 years, and I talked to him today from Durban, South Africa, which is where he lives.
All right, let's hear that conversation with Robbie Koenig and our own Tom Tebbett.
Robbie Koenig, welcome to our show.
Tom, thanks very much for having me along. Always a pleasure chatting, Mike.
For people who are not familiar with you and your tennis broadcasting, often with Jason Goodall, we see it here on Sportsnet and also on TennisTV.com. What's your background as a tennis player and as a broadcaster?
Well, I played pro for 13 years on the ATP World Tour. I had most of my success in doubles, semi-finalist at the U.S. Open, quarter-finalist there a couple of times. Did a can singles early on in my career. Got through the likes of Kafelnikov, Henman, Rafter. But when those guys grew a little taller, a little stronger than me, they went on to have much better careers. Unfortunately for me, Tom, I stayed at 5'10", and that doesn't help in the modern game.
Right, that's a little bit tricky. The TPL coverage, you do all the Masters series and a few others. What have you learned in your time as a broadcaster? How have you sort of evolved as a broadcaster?
Well, you know, we do a lot of matches over the course of the year, and it's given me so much in-depth insight into the different players' games. You know, often when you sit as a coach on the side of the court, you're biased towards what you're seeing. But as an independent individual watching the games unfold, together with all the analysis that we get as well from Hawker, who are constantly feeding us information, it's given me an analytical mind towards the sport that I would never otherwise have if I wasn't in that position. And I think that's a powerful tool if I ever wanted to go into coaching or when I'm giving seminars and talking about the sport. It does give me a lot of information that I think is very useful, Tom.
Robbie, you said you're 5'10" when as a player. How much different a player would you have been? Because you had most of your best results in doubles. You got to number 28 in the world in doubles. If you'd been 6'2", would you have been a much different player?
Honestly speaking, yes. You know, I grew up as a serve and volleyer, and like I said, I grew up playing with guys like Rafters and Kafelnikovs of the world, Tim Henman, and for a couple of years, certainly I think my ability was as good as theirs, but it was so interesting to watch their careers just surpass mine because of superior firepower. And, you know, the serve is such an integral part of a serve and volleyer's game. And I watched a guy like Pat Rafter suddenly, when he was, you know, 20, 21, almost have the sprout where he went from being 5'10 to like 6'1, 6'2. And I saw a massive difference in his game. And I was known for having good volleys during my time. And I think if I could have supplemented that with a good serve, I think I could have certainly been a top 50 player throughout the course of my career. But obviously, that wasn't the case. And I think that's why my game translated so well towards doubles, because I didn't have the firepower, but of course, I only had to cover half the court. So it was a lot tougher for opponents than to exploit my weaknesses, whereas obviously in the singles court, they've got a lot more room to work with.
We talked about this a little bit, but what have you enjoyed most about going into broadcasting after being a player?
sharing my ideas and opinions and what I see with a global audience. And I'm deeply passionate about the sport, and I love it. And for me to be around this generation of players, watching it unfold firsthand, being on site, being there live, watching the guys practice, watch the guys play, watching them do their physical workouts, because I think we could look back in 20, 30 years' time and see this generation as one of the best we've ever had in the sport. And I think it's a real privilege for me to be watching it unfold, you know, right in front of my eyes. And someone who really enjoys the sport, it's almost like it's a privilege to be where I am.
Nowadays, all the top guys are good guys. It seems quite amazing, but this is a bit of an odd question, but are there still some jerks out there?
I think there's probably one or two guys that aren't the most popular. You know, one of the guys I wouldn't call him a jerk, but I wouldn't say he was one of the most popular guys, and that was Robin Söderling. He went about his business, and I often think that sometimes the guys are almost too nice to each other, and there's a lot of buddy-buddy and hugging after matches. I'm not used to that, but I do like good sportsmanship at the same time. But I think often for me a good handshake suffices. But I enjoyed the fact that a guy like Söderling wasn't too buddy-buddy with everybody else. He'd go out there, and he had one thing on his mind, and that was to beat those guys. And it wasn't all this hugging that goes on after the matches. And I'm a little bit old school like that. I don't mind it. But, you know, McEnroe, Connors era, when those guys were going at it, and they were a lot colder and a lot harder, I enjoy that. I think once they retire from tennis, let them be the best of friends. I don't mind a bit of edge, Tom. That's what I'm saying.
My favorite story about Söderling is a few years ago, the French Tennis Magazine did a story about who were the real jerks on the tour. And some of the French guys, they mentioned a couple of Czechs, actually, Burdick and Stepanek. And they also mentioned Söderling, but a few of them said, well, once he got a girlfriend, he was a much nicer guy. So there's lots of things that play into it. What are the one or two things that, say, are your pet peeves? What are the things you'd like to see changed in tennis?
Well, interestingly enough, I'll probably get a bit of a rollicking from the diehards here, but one is a fifth-set tiebreaker in the majors. I'd be happy for that. Just to be like it is at the US Open. I like a fifth-set tiebreaker. I don't like long sets, Tom. I think sometimes matches can lose that incredible tension that builds up because, you know, sometimes you get these matches go 10-all, 12-all, 14-all. You know, by then, I'm just sitting in front of the TV thinking, I want to win it to this thing. Whereas by 6-all, if it was a tiebreaker, you know, the tension is there and it's going to come to an end pretty soon. And I know that as a viewer or as a spectator. And I also think that at least the winner has a chance to go on the next day or the day after that and have a real shot at doing well in a tournament. I think when these matches go so long, 12-all, 15-all, whatever, the guy who wins has pretty much got no shot 2 days later because he's so jaded. So that's the one thing I would change. The other thing is the let in tennis. I would get rid of that. We have so many instances where the player's heard it and the umpire hasn't and vice versa. Get rid of a net. Just play it like you would in a regular point, and you've got to react to it. Just like a dead net court off a ground stroke, the same thing can happen on the serve. I would get rid of the nets as well. And, you know, those are the two things. Probably the one other thing, after having a lengthy discussion about what happened in Montreal with the Milos touching the net, why not be able to review something like that? We have Hawkeye to review line calls. What about in an instance where the umpire's not sure whether the player's touched the net or not? We're going to have a look at the screen and be able to review something other than a line call. So those three things probably spring to mind. Oh, sorry, maybe one other thing, Tom, as well. Injury timeouts. You get 1 3-minute timeout, and that's it. You can't have all these different timeouts. If it's your left quad, then you get another 3 minutes. If it's your right quad, and if it's your shoulder, you get another 3 minutes. Only one timeout, that's it.
Well,
that's what I would go for. Those four things.
What about when the commentator loses his voice? Is he allowed to have a glass of water?
He should be having a glass of water when the point is ongoing and when he's keeping quiet.
Robbie, I'm going to give you the name of some players who may be the next generation. I just want a short little comment in each one of them. So here's the first one, Milos Raonic.
Superb firepower. Obviously, needs to work on his return of serve and his movement. But between the ears, very strong. Definitely top 10.
Jerzy Janowicz.
He's got all the credentials for me. He's still very green. His upside is the most, as far as I'm concerned, out of all the names that you're going to give me today.
Grigor Dimitrov.
I'm concerned that, as funny as it sounds, that the amount of talent that he has, he almost has too much talent, because I think sometimes he's inclined not to work as hard. But I think he's with the best possible team at the moment, the team of good to great with Magnus Norman. If there's any player-coach setup that's going to work well, it'll be with those guys, because the Swedes are very good at working hard. And I hope that they can pass on that work ethic to him, because if he gets that right, he's dangerous. I do worry a little bit about his single-handed backhand, though, in the modern game.
Bernard Tomic?
Immense talent, but hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. One of my favorite mantras in life. And he's so young. He's obviously got to get his life outside of tennis in order, because, I think his game is actually pretty good. He doesn't have too many holes in his game. And his upside for me is huge. But probably I'll put him behind all the other guys that we've mentioned right now.
And the last one, Vasek Pospisil.
Well, I've seen the least of him, but I was incredibly impressed by what I saw in Montreal just a couple of weeks ago. I couldn't believe how big the kid was, first of all, when I got to see him now, and how well he moves. So considering that the guy's already ranked 40 in the world, given what I saw in Canada, mental fortitude, fitness, all-round ability, the guy should be at least top 15 with what he's got and with what I saw in Canada. The only asterisk I have there is, of course, playing at home, I reckon, gives you an extra 15% out of your game. The big question is he going to be able to repeat that week in, week out?
You're in South Africa right now. You're a South African. You've had players like Cliff Drysdale and Kevin Kern, Amanda Kutzer on the women's side, and now Kevin Anderson. What's the state of South African tennis at the moment? What are the challenges?
It's not good. The biggest challenge is finances. We have a lot of talented kids. Sports are high priority in this country. We have a lot of talented sportsmen. Generally, a fair few of them end up going the way of golf, tennis, and cricket, just because there's so much funding in those sports. So, you know, there's a lot of competitions for them to play in. They don't have to travel abroad in order to do it, in order to get better, much better. And that's the big problem with tennis. In order to improve, we have to travel. It costs a lot of money. It's a dollar-denominated sport as tennis, as you well know. So we don't have those kind of funds and funding available by the National Association. So unless you're picking up a sponsor from a private entity or you have wealthy parents, it's very difficult to travel abroad.
Will you be at home during the U.S. Open, Robbie?
I will this year, Tom. I'm not doing any commentary, but I'll probably be in studio guest for our national broadcaster, Super Sport. So we'll be discussing the matches and keeping an eye on them. One of my favorite tournaments, as I mentioned at the start of the show, was a place where I had the most success as a player. And conditions are very similar in New York as to what I grew up with here in Durban, South Africa. Grew up playing all our tennis on hard courts. Gets pretty windy. Learned how to deal with those growing up. And it translated well for me. And obviously, I have a big affinity to the tournament, so I'm pretty sad that I'm not going to be there this year. And, you know, I'm a tennis fan, just like everybody else is out there. I'm lucky that I get to it every day. And that novelty hasn't worn off just yet, as you well know.
I sure do. Listen, Robbie, it's been great to have you on the show tonight. Thank you very much.
TT, it's always a pleasure catching up with you, and thanks for having me on board. Real privilege.
Well, I think you can hear the enthusiasm in Robbie's voice talking about getting down there really near, close to the court to watch Federer and Nadal. Doesn't get much better than that, and you don't get much better review of what it's really like than he had that night.
Tennis gets in your blood. He's a terrific guy and a great interview, Tom, for sure. Okay, coming up, Mr. Pospisil in conversation with Tom Tebbit. Tom's mailbag, your questions coming up, Roger at sportsnet590.ca. And, of course, we'll talk a little bit about next week's show when we wrap up the entire season here of Aces. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. You're listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. It's Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Roger Lajoie, Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. One more show in our Aces season next week. We'll be talking about the U.S. Open. We'll talk about the U.S. Open in our final segment as well, and it'll be right into the heart of it next week. That's next Thursday night right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada, who has sponsored the show all year, and we thank them for their support. Tennis Canada has been great to us here on Aces throughout the course of the season. Wow, what a week in Canadian tennis at the Rogers Cup and now the U.S. Open. Talk to us about Pospisil and, well, Canadian tennis. What a great time.
Well, it's terrific. Even Eugenie Bouchard played a good match here against Kvitova, won a round, played a very good match at the Rogers Cup in Toronto. Vasek obviously was out of sight and so close to actually to getting into the final, the Raonic. Pospisil semifinal went to a third set tiebreak. At times it looked like Vasek actually was probably a little bit more in control, maybe a little bit more composed. Made a couple of unforced errors, kind of unfortunate, but he's a very, very good ball player and he's a very good athlete as well.
He's a pretty good talker too, because here's his conversation with Tom Tebbit.
Vasek Pospisil, welcome to our show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
How's the practice going for the U.S. Open?
Yeah, it's going good. I had a couple of days rest, and so I'm feeling good. I'm feeling recharged and hitting well, and yeah, looking forward to my first match on Monday.
Do you enjoy the final days leading up to a Grand Slam? Can you relax, or is it a little bit too stressful just knowing that a Grand Slam is just around the corner?
I'd say I enjoy the days prior to the last 2 days. I mean, the last 2 days, it starts to, you know, the adrenaline starts to kick in a little bit, and the match is getting closer, so it's... But you try to relax. I mean, it's a physically it's relaxing because you're not doing much. But you know, mentally, it's more relaxing in the days prior to that, for sure.
Do you know about the U.S. Open draw? Who you'll be playing?
Yes, I just found out that I'm playing a qualifier, and then potentially to play Nadal.
Yeah, well, I was not going to tell you that it was Nadal, but obviously you've already heard. Would you prefer not to know that? Do you usually try not to find out who you're playing, or do you like to have a... I think Federer likes to take a look at the whole thing, usually.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really... For me, it doesn't really make a difference. I don't really look to see who I'm playing, you know, in the second, third rounds, because I just take one match at a time. But even now, even knowing that if I win, you know, I could play Nadal, it doesn't really change anything. I'm going to go into... You know, into my first round, wanting to win that round, and then you know, if I can do that, then I'll look forward to the next one. But very very short term thinking when it comes to match preparations.
Right. Moving from just inside the top 100 to 39 in just a couple of weeks is a heck of a jump. Do you actually feel something in your game? Do you feel you're mastering your strokes better than you were, say, a month or two ago?
I'd say not so much a month or two ago, because I feel like, you know, 2 months ago or so, my strokes were already coming together and I was playing really well. So I just, I knew that I was playing a good level, and I was just hoping, you know, that I'd have a tournament somewhere soon within the next couple months that I could have a breakthrough in, or, you know, and so it was obviously amazing that it happened in Montreal, but definitely, I would say the last couple months, I've noticed a difference in you know, the way I've been hitting my strokes, and just overall, I feel like I've been improving a lot lately.
And is the movement part of that as well?
I wouldn't say so much the movement. The specific, you know, well, specific balance things that we've been doing with my coach, you know, on the strokes, and they've just actually increased the precision and consistency of my baseline game, you know. So I think it's more of the specific technical things that we've been working on court.
What would some of those technical things be?
Basically, you know, I've been trying to keep my upper body, you know, more balanced. I would tend to, you know, kind of move my upper body too much when I was playing in the past and moving around the court. So I'm just trying to keep my upper body and my arms, you know, a little bit separate from my legs and the rest of my body when I'm hitting. And, you know, that's just honestly one of the many things that we've changed in my game. But I think that one is a crucial one, and just having kind of more of a relaxed approach to the matches and the points when I'm playing them.
Yeah, we have Canada's a big Davis Cup tie coming up in Serbia right after the U.S. Open. Are you prepared to play two singles and the doubles?
I mean, if that's what I'm called upon to do, then I feel physically that I'll be ready to do that. You know, for sure, I feel like I'm in the best shape of my life right now. I mean, I'm moving well. I'm lighter on the court, and you know, I've been doing a lot of hard work in the gym all year long. So if you know, if that situation were to arise, then for sure I feel like I'm ready to handle it.
Maybe it's hard to do, but you've talked about losing these 10 or 12 pounds. Do you actually feel that when you're out there playing?
Yeah, I noticed it, quite early, you know, just, you know, throughout the year, I noticed I don't get tired. I do get tired, but like after a match or so, I have much less soreness than I have in the past. If I, you know, if I played a long three-setter, oftentimes I'd wake up the next day and I'd have, little tears, not tears, little pulls all over my, you know, legs and glutes and honestly, it would affect the matches after that. But just losing a little bit of weight, I feel like I'm much better recovering for the next matches after a tough match.
What do you think of Canada's chances playing on the indoor clay, red clay in Belgrade?
Yeah, I mean, if anything is possible. You know, we have a great team, even though it's going to be a tough match against Novak and his team. At least it's indoors. We like that. So, Canadians like indoors, but you know, obviously, it's going to be very tough. The conditions are not going to be, you know, in our favor. You know, playing obviously away from home on their court and in front of their fans, so it's going to be a really big challenge. But at the same time, I mean, we've come this far, so it's not something that we can't overcome as a team if we get together and you know do our best, and which of course we will.
How much did Milos making it to the top of the rankings give you the confidence that you could do it as well?
You know what? Not even that much. I wouldn't even say for sure. Obviously, knowing that Milos is there in the back of the mind, you know that yeah, that I can do it and that it's possible. But when you know, it really comes down to the level of play. At the end of the day, it doesn't come down to. I mean, the confidence can help and the extra motivation can help, but at the end of the day, it's whether you're able to play at that level or not. And so I think the big thing that was missing maybe the last couple of years is not even so much, you know, whether I believe that I could get there, but more, some things that needed to be tweaked in my game. And as I said, I feel like I've grown, as a player, quite a lot the last six to eight months. So for sure, I feel like that was the biggest change. And then obviously, you know, the confidence comes with, a few matches. If you win a few matches, beat a few good players, then, you know, the ball can start rolling. But, if you don't have, the level and don't put in the hours in the practice court, in the right, practicing the right way, then that could never, might never happen.
The week before the Rogers Cup in Montreal, you were playing in the final of the Challenger in Vancouver, and you were down 4-2 in the third set against Daniel Evans, a British player. He was serving at 40-15. I was watching it. Looked to me like you were in pretty bad shape, and somehow you came back and won that one. And then the week after the Rogers Cup, you win your first round in Cincinnati. Then you're up 5-1 in the third set tiebreak in Cincinnati against David Goffin, and you wind up losing that match. When things like that happen both ways, you just kind of have to say to yourself, that's tennis?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Tennis has some luck involved too. So, you know, sometimes you find yourself winning matches that maybe you don't even deserve to win more than the opponent. And, you know, that can jumpstart some good results for yourself. And then, you know, other times you can lose a match where, you know, as I did in Cincinnati, where honestly, you know, you get really unlucky and, you felt like you deserved to win that match. So, you know, it goes both ways. Sometimes you get lucky a little bit, sometimes you get unlucky, but at the end of the day, as you said, you know, that's the sport, and as long as you're doing the things that you need to be doing in the right way, then, you know, the percentages will be on your side.
Do you have anything that you like to do in New York outside the tennis just to have a little fun?
No, not really. I haven't really had time to do anything fun yet, but my brother's coming into town tomorrow, so I'll try to, you know, we'll think of something to do on the weekend leading up to the tournament to relax a little bit and get my mind off of the first round. We'll find it something to do for sure.
How is making the Rogers Cup semifinal in a match that was widely viewed across the country with Milos, has that changed things for you? Do you find that you're more recognized now?
Yeah, it's definitely changed things a little bit, you know, obviously apart from the you know, the congratulatory, you know, messages and everybody and all the players, you know, saying congrats or whatever. It's nice. You know, it's more seeing myself up there in the top 50 now. It's really satisfying achievement for me, you know, already for this year. But by no means will I, you know, be happy with that. I'm always looking to move forward and to have a new goal set. And so now I would obviously love to finish the year in top 30. That's my next goal. But definitely, yeah, I mean, it's changed a lot of things now. I'm going to be in main draws of, you know, all these ATP events. So it's definitely, you know, it could be a career changing tournament for me.
You've given a lot of credit to your coach, Fred Fontang, the last few months. What do you like most about him?
Yes, he's an incredible coach. He's a really good person, and you know what I really enjoy working with him is everything is very straightforward and very professional. You know, he's quiet, but he knows his stuff. He has so much experience. You know, working obviously with Chardy all those years, and himself being a top 50 player, so. So there's just been a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge that I've gained from him. But I just feel like we mesh well as a team. You know, I feel like our personalities match quite well and we're both very hard workers. And I think that that for sure is one of the reasons why, I've improved so much over the course of the last 8 months.
Well, just the last question here. What would be the most surprising thing we'd find in your racket bag?
The most surprising thing you find in a racket bag. We got to think about that. You know, oh yeah, okay, I know. A roll of duct tape.
A roll of what?
A roll of duct tape.
For what?
It's for my, oftentimes when I slide on the hard court, I get holes in the sides of my shoes. And I actually tape it from the inside so it doesn't cut my skin, because in the past I had some issues with it cutting my skin and bleeding a little bit. So I make sure I duct tape it up if I get little holes.
Well, Vasek, thanks a lot for being on the show this evening.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, I don't know who gave you the idea to ask about carrying stuff in your bag, because you did it with Eugenie Bouchard, too. And Pospisil's answer is great. It just shows you, here's a guy, world-famous tennis player now, up-and-comer, Canadian tennis star, and taping his shoes. I think that's what a great story.
Well, isn't the scout motto be prepared?
Yeah.
Well, I guess he is. It's surprising that he'd have to do it himself maybe at the changeovers, but obviously he knows how to do it.
Well, he's one of the many reasons we're all excited about Canadian tennis for sure. All right, coming up after our next update, we will have Tom's mailbag. Your questions for Tom are welcome. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. We'll preview the U.S. Open, and we'll look forward to next week's show as well as Aces wraps up its season next Thursday night in this time slot. You can always reach us on Twitter at TheRog590, at Tom Tebbett, and by email, Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Tom Tebbett's mailbag is coming up with your questions and some U.S. Open talk as Aces continues with LeJoie and Tebbett right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca.
Roger LeJoie, Tom Tebbett, it's Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We got one more show to come next Thursday, so be sure to tune in, 7 o'clock Eastern Time on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. We'll be right into the heart of the U.S. Open then. We'll be talking about that, and we will announce the winner of the Wilson Tennis Racket. All year, we gave away the Rogers Cup tickets. The winners have been put into Tom's cauldron. It's a big cauldron that Tom carries with him, actually, and wherever he goes, it's really weird. We've put them in, we'll spin, and we'll pull out the winning number. What a great prize somebody's going to win.
Wilson Steam Racket, as you well know, Roger, the ultimate in string technology.
And a great racket, indeed, and a great prize. So that's next week, and especially if you've won. Stick around, and we'll see who wins that next week. This final segment of this week's show on Aces is brought to you by National Bank. And National Bank has also supported us all year, which we thank them very much. National Bank bringing you this final segment of Aces, which is usually Tom's mailbag. And we will get to the mailbag and spend a few minutes on the mailbag. But, Tom, let's talk about the U.S. Open. You have so many sub-stories. And I guess, you know, if we start, it really comes down to the health of players. We'll get to the Canadians in a second, but already significant players are having injuries that are going to stop them from playing or might be a concern in the tournament. Let's start on the women's side.
Well, Maria Sharapova is not playing. She's got bursitis in her elbow, her shoulder, And shoulder has been a problem before. She had surgery on it. I believe it was in 2008. She came back in 2009. It really wasn't until 2010 that she really got going. And finally, she didn't win a Grand Slam again until 2012, the French Open. So it's been a bit of a wonky joint for her. This is kind of concerning. I understand it could be 2 or 3 months even before she can play again. So she was practicing at the U.S. Open, and I'm sure she was hitting the ball well with her ground strokes. But when it comes to hitting it overhead or when it comes to hitting a serve, I think it's completely different thing. So I'm sure that's the reason she wasn't able to play, because people saw her there, looked like she was fine. But you try to hit a serve when you got bursitis in your shoulder, I don't think it's very easy.
Not going to happen. And you know it's a serious injury to withdraw from the Open that far in advance. So hopefully she does get back into form at some time soon. It does open up the field a little bit, but it has all been about Serena Williams for so long in women's tennis. No reason to not think that's going to repeat itself.
Well, I think really it's about two women. It's about her and Victoria Azarenka, who's the number two
seed.
Yeah, she beat her in Cincinnati on the weekend and was pretty impressive third set tiebreak. I think Serena was kind of fried. She'd won the tournament in Toronto the week before, played through the whole week, and she's 32 years old next month. I think maybe physically and mentally she was a little bit fried. But full credit to Azarenka, because it's always easy to play that player and play them tough, but to actually go over the threshold and actually win the match, which she did, you got to give her credit. And they were in the final last year, and Azarenka led 5-3 in the third set, and Serena came back and won that one. So that was a very competitive final a year ago. I think the best thing for women's tennis, if you could have that final again, because I really think Azarenka believes she can beat Serena.
Is there something about the styles of those two players that kind of favors her? Because everyone has been waiting for that challenger to Serena. And, you know, Serena is played so well and has been in the zone for so many years now. Great. But you think at some point, taking a step back, who would be the next player? Is she the best capable to do this? Or is it just a case she happens to be playing very good tennis right now?
No, I think she's won 2 Australian Opens now. She's won Grand Slams. She's pushed Serena before. And the other thing is, Azarenka is a little bit of a, shouldn't say this, but a nasty piece of work. Mm. She's a tough cookie, and goodness knows Serena's a tough cookie. So you got tough cookie against tough cookie. It's not like, I remember once at the Australian Open seeing Serena playing Kim Clijsters, and Clijsters had her 5-2 in the third set. And I think Clijsters just looked over the net and saw that desire, that will, and that determination in Serena, and just thought,
it's psyched out.
Yeah, yeah, it got psyched out. So yeah. I don't think Azarenka will get psyched out, but I don't see too many other players. There is a slight chance that Agnieszka Radwanska gave Serena a good match here in the semifinal. And she's a kind of a clever player, keep a lot of balls in play, put a lot of pressure on Serena, hit a lot of good shots. And if Serena's a little bit nervous, and I think she's getting more nervous now as she gets later in her career, and you look at the 3 Grand Slams so far this year, she's only won one of them. So you would have thought at this point she definitely would have won 2, if not all 3. So Radwanska might be able to get to her 2, and who knows, maybe some other player just in the right circumstance, as it was with Lisicki at Wimbledon.
That's Tom Tebbit. I'm Roger Lajoie. We'll be talking about the U.S. Open extensively, of course, next week for sure, right here on Aces. Tom's mailbag coming up shortly as well. If you've got a question, Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. Drop it in at Roger at Sportsnet590.ca, and we'll get to as many as we can. We can't get them all, but we'll save some for next time as well, and we'll use them up next week too. So if it's a good question for Tom, we always like to hear from him. We'll hear from you shortly. Okay, men's side. Roger Federer is the guy for so many years, like Serena has been the man. He's clearly no longer the man, but the big question is he capable of rising up? And we've made the mistake of writing him off before, but now you hear comments like, you know, John McEnroe saying he doesn't see another Grand Slam for him. He appears to be hurt. It seems like the storm is coming at the same time, Tom. Father time, age, the injury factor, and the top players in the world are still pretty darn good players. Like, you know, Djokovic and Nadal aren't going away. What's the future for Roger Federer?
Well, I think anybody who's a fan of Roger Federer was very encouraged by what he did in the quarterfinal match against Nadal in Cincinnati last week. He won the first set. He was right in it in the second set. Maybe faded a bit in the third. I give credit to Nadal. I think he did start to play better, but I think it was a very encouraging match for Federer. Apparently the back was not an issue. So I think he goes into the U.S. Open at least encouraged that he can play that kind of level against a guy who's clearly the best player in the world right now. The only problem with the U.S. Open is they did the draw today, and anybody who's looked at it thought, oh my goodness, Federer and Nadal in the quarterfinals. So he could have got David Ferrer in the quarterfinals, but he got Nadal. And so that's going to be a repeat, and he's been getting Nadal a lot in quarterfinals since he slipped out. Well, Nadal at one point slipped out of the top four, so he was 5-8, so he could get Roger in the quarters, and now it's the reverse. So it's going to be tough. The only good thing about that is that they are on the David Ferrer side of the draw. So if whoever wins that match doesn't have to play a really tough semifinal, probably, because on the other side, it's going to be Djokovic and Murray in the semifinal. And they were, of course, the final last year and have been the final, I think, of 3 of the last 4 Grand Slams. So whoever wins the Nadal-Federer match, and I guess most people think it'll be Nadal, if they both get through, of course, could have a bit of a breather in the semi and then be in better shape for the final. So who knows if Djokovic and Murray might, you know, beat the heck out of each other in that semifinal and make it tougher for the final.
Be interesting to see what Andy Murray brings to this particular U.S. Open, too, because there is a guy who looks like he's just rounded into last, you know, after so many frustrations and having to play the big three. Now he's in the big three. Maybe he's in the big two, the way he's been playing sometimes.
Yeah, he's been playing very well. The only thing, he goes in after a couple of disappointing matches. He lost to Gobis in Montreal, and he lost to Thomas Berdych in Cincinnati. So, but I actually think sometimes, a lot of times, the tournaments leading into a Grand Slam are not that sort of important and not that relevant in a sense, because if you lose, then you tend to be a little bit more fired up. And in Nadal's case, he's just been sublime, beating everybody in these two tournaments, that, you know, there's kind of a bit of more pressure on him, and maybe even a sense in his own mind, well, when's this going to end? I can't believe how well I'm playing. Whereas the other guys are fired up to say, I got to be better than I was, and I am going to be better. So it's going to be interesting. I think you definitely got to put Djokovic, Nadal, and Murray as a select group, and Federer with a few other guys below that. But the three of them have obviously won each of the Grand Slams so far this year, and I'm sure they're all fired up to try to win two, because that would kind of, even if Nadal looks like he's going to finish number one in the ranking, if you win two of the four Grand Slams, it kind of gives you a bit of a heads up on everybody else.
That's Tom Tebbit. I'm Roger Lajoie. It's Aces time now for Tom's mailbag. We've got lots of questions. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Roger at sportsnet590.ca. Reach us on Twitter at the Rog 590. At the Rog 590. That's my handle. Or at Tom Tebbit. Drop a tweet anytime, an email anytime. And if we don't get your question this week, we will get to them next week in our final show of Aces next Thursday night in this time slot. So let's get to them, Tom. Tyson says, I am curious what Tom thought about the incident in the Raonic-Del Potro match at the Rogers Cup, where Raonic didn't call the net touch on himself. Lindsay Davenport of the Tennis Channel said she would have called it on herself, and there is an honor code in tennis. Should you do that? And it goes on. Tyson, thank you for the question. It is a great question, because tennis is a lot like golf in terms of, they're the only two sports that would come in. Like, no one, you know, a base runner wouldn't go into second and go, no, Mr. Umpire, you had that call wrong. I was safe. But what about that?
Well, all the time I've been in tennis, I remember when I first began, the idea is, you know, two buddies are playing each other, and so they each call the lines for themselves. But very quickly, I think, as a professional player, you find out that you play some guy sometime, and you're a nice guy, and you give him the call and all that stuff, and then the same thing happens on the other side, and then the guy doesn't give it to you. So very quickly, you learn. You play the calls. You let the umpire control the match. And in a way, I think that's what happened to Milos. I think I'm being a bit of an apologist here, but it happened very quickly. He did touch the net, sort of looked at the umpire. The umpire didn't see it. There is another facet to this, too, is the ball has to bounce twice. And if the ball bounces twice, then you can touch the net. But obviously that ball did not bounce twice. But I think Milos just reacted sort of instinctively. It was in the heat of the action. It was a huge point near the end of the second set. And I think he sort of expected the umpire to maybe take control of the situation. As he said, he had really not been through this before. Still, you got to call that sort of thing. It's the ethic of the sport. It's the way it happens. But in the heat of the action like that, when it happened, I give him a little bit of a pass on that, and you have to give him credit afterwards. He did apologize for it and did explain that, you know, he sort of saw that maybe he did make a mistake. But like I said, he did the action. It's easy to criticize.
Yeah, we'll see what happens next time it happens to him in his career, but it's a fascinating thing about the ethics and etiquette of the sport, for sure. Charlotte, regular emailer. Charlotte, always nice to hear from you, says, during Montreal and Cincinnati, I noticed that Rafa was getting a lot more free points off the serve, more than usual. It's not like Rafa is throwing down bombs like Raonic or John Isner, or Rafa's service patterns are not that predictable. So, Tom, do you have any theories on why he's able to get so many cheap points off the serve? Is it just the action, movement, accuracy of his serve?
I don't like to be oversimplistic here, but I think he's just playing well. Mm-hmm. He's playing unbelievably well, as you could see the level of his play all through those two tournaments. And I think the serve is just following suit. And the other thing, obviously, we know he's left-handed, and that's not easy for guys. And the other thing is, when he's playing that well, when you're returning serve, you're feeling that much more pressure to make the return. Because, you know, he's playing so well that you just can't take a chance on, you know, he's going to break your serve at some point. So you really want to make sure you try to break his serve. I think there's more pressure on him. And I don't think it's anything like there was a couple of years ago. I think he changed his grip slightly, served his brains out at the U.S. Open, but they only did that for a week. So he's just playing well. And obviously the serve is part of it.
AJ emails in, what's the biggest weakness in Milos's game? Some suggest it's movement. He disagrees. He thinks it's his biggest weakness is the return of serve, specifically the backhand return of serve. What do you think, Tom?
Well, definitely, I think everybody sees that the return is not up to par with a player of his ranking, or even a player ranked number 30. On the other hand, as I always say to everybody, he's the flip side of him having an absolutely amazing serve, maybe the best serve in tennis, is that he's not going to return that well. You can't sort of have it both ways, and what he has to do is improve the return as much as he can. But he doesn't want to lose anything on that serve because that's the key to his game. So it's sort of normal. You seldom get a guy who's that big and got that good a serve who all of a sudden is going to return serve like Andre Agassi or Novak Djokovic or something.
Almost out of time. We got 1 minute quickly for Mac. He was born and raised in Montreal, still lives there, but says, does Montreal have better tennis fans than Toronto? Good question to ask right after the Rogers Cup.
Absolutely, Roger. Well, I'm originally from Quebec, and I've been going to the tournament in Montreal
they
for a long
time.
They
do love it, and I agree with you. They do love it in Montreal.
Well, I've said a million times, I think in Montreal, it's more like a European sport. They have more of a European appreciation of tennis, whereas in English North America, I think tennis always comes behind golf. But if you watch the TV sports and stuff in Quebec, tennis will get a prominent position ahead of golf a lot of the time, and they just really appreciate their tennis. Plus, Roger, as you know, with your last name, there's a little bit of Latin going on there, and you know what happens when that's there.
They enjoy it. You're so right. Well said. That's Tom Tebbit. I'm Roger Lajoie. Next week, U.S. Open chat on Aces. Tom, great to have you again. Thanks.
Good to be here, Roger.
That's Tom Tebbit. I'm Roger Lajoie. Folks, thank you. Derek Brandeir, our technical director. All of you, of course, for sending in your questions. To Vashik and Robbie for being on the program. And we'll talk to you in one more week next week. And again, thanks to Tennis Canada and National Bank, our sponsors on Aces. We'll be back a week Thursday. Follow us on Twitter at TheRog590, at TheRog590, or at Tom Tebbit. Email the show anytime, Roger at Sportsnet590.ca. You've been listening to Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.